Hey guys, Mark from the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast here. Just dropped in at the beginning of the podcast to remind you all that if you want the inside scoop on any news or any deals that we've got going on at the shop, do follow us on Twitter at GAK_co_UK. You can also follow the podcast guys individually. You can follow me at Mark_random. You can follow Matt at Matt_nightsy. You can follow Jay at JAYBN1. And you can follow Joe at Joseph_900. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Matt and I am the manager in store.
Hello, my name's Jay, I'm the assistant manager.
And I'm Joe and I'm here for bass.
How's it going, chaps?
Yeah, good.
Wonderful.
All in the same room once again.
Well, we were in the same room 20 minutes ago.
Well, that's what I mean, once again.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
So I meant I was referencing the time when we were in the same room 20 minutes ago.
After that time that Mark left the microphones and then we couldn't podcast until we went
to his house. Yes, that might have happened. I might have gone to the shop and forgotten to take all the microphones with me, so we've had to come back here. But pretty sure we might be podding back in the shop after next week. Now that the work's complete?
Maybe. Ooh. I don't know. I kind of like podding at your house.
Okay.
Well, do we get the desk back?
No, the desk is gone. Oh. The desk is gone.
That's
forever.
The problem. We haven't really got anywhere to.
Yeah, well,
unless we do it all via little lapel mics.
I reckon we could buy some of those puffs. What do you call them? The puffs.
The ones for chairs.
This is awful. What are you doing? I'm going to start the podcast again. Because that's just ruined and put me in a bad mood.
They are called puffs.
Yeah, but needless sort of faux homophobia. It's not
foamophobia.
Like, it's
a fear of foam.
Bay-gashing.
Right. Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop podcast. I am your host, Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Matt and I am the manager in the store.
Hello, it's Jay. I'm the assistant manager.
It's Jay.
Yeah, I also almost forgot my job title.
It's Jay.
It's that's really bad. Hi, I'm Jay. I'm the assistant manager here in the guitar store.
And I'm Joe, and I'm here for bass.
It's Joe.
It would have been better.
It's
if you
Joe.
How is everyone?
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Excellent. First up in the podcast, I wanted to just give a bit of a shout out to everyone who's joined the Facebook group. We've had loads of good stuff going on this week. We've had loads of people join, loads of talk about guitars, and pretty much where we've sourced all the questions for this evening's podcast. If you want to join us on there, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds groups. Guitar nerds group. Yeah, guitar nerds group. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. Or just search for guitar nerds group. In Facebook. That's where we talk about all things podcast related with other guitar nerds. So, like I was saying, we're going to do all questions this evening because we've had loads through the Facebook group and some on Twitter and some via email as well. I thought we could crack on with doing some of those. First up, Doug via email says, have you guys ever discussed on the podcast the Marshall 50th anniversary 1-watt heads? Looking to purchase a JVM 1H for practice purposes and wonder what you guys thought of them when they came out in 2012. I know at first they were pricey but limited, but the DSL and JVM have come down significantly in price and can still be purchased. I'm not sure we haven't got any available anymore, have we? I mean, what were your kind of thoughts on them?
They're okay. To be honest, 1 watt is always a weird amp.
Yeah, it is a weird amp.
Because you don't get a ton of headroom, but they just, to me, they sound too compressed. Now, I would cut it off at 5.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, I think if you were really techie and you actually rated them, they would probably be rated probably a little less or a little bit more than 1 watt anyway. It's because they use two. They basically use a preamp valve for the power amp valve because the power amp valve gives you too much, well, power. And you know, I'm sure we've talked about them and they were good, but to me they were always a little bit more...
Just a little bit lackluster. Like, I think there was... for around the same sort of price, in fact maybe even a little bit cheaper, you can get the Hughes and Kettner Tubemeister 5 watt.
Yeah.
And that comes down to a 1.
It goes 5 Does it go down to a
one? I think it'll do a one and then mark a half or something.
I think it's five or off, actually. I think with the which I should know this. I do have one. I just never turned it around.
It's the 18 that's got all the switchable.
Right, the 36 and the 18 does.
But I'll tell you what actually is even better and better value for money, the Blackstar stuff. The HT1, they do an HT1 actually, but they do an HT5 combo. Amazing drive sound, great clean sound, and to me, I think probably the same money that some of those 1-watt amps are now.
I would say that definitely you want to be looking at other things. I mean, the TubeMeister guitarist in the band that I play in has got one. So impressed by the sound on those. I think he's actually got the 18, but the 5, from what I've heard of it, also does nice cleans, but you know, modern gain stuff as well. Yeah. Just having a look at the switching on that, you've got 5 watts or off. And that's the other thing about the Hughes & Kettner, you get the red box out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you get the emulated line output. So
you get the same on the Blackstar as well, and with the emulated workers' headphones as well. So you can plug headphones in.
You don't even need to have a load plugged in, do you?
No.
So you can just literally just have that like on your desk.
And
whatever.
Actually, I can't remember which one it is. It might be all of them, but when you unplug.
It
automatically knocks it into standby on the Blackstar ones.
Okay.
So you unplug the input jacket, it'll put it in standby, and then it'll just automatically work out the line out.
Whether you do the whether you unplug the speaker cable or unplug the jack cable by mistake.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Just going to standby mode.
Yeah.
In terms of tones, I've not spent much time with the HT like the Blackstar stuff because we've only just become a Blackstar dealer. But you're going to get Marshall-ish tones out of it, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, the key to those is the ISF control, or the infinite shape frequency,
I think it is.
Okay.
Which basically takes you all the way at zero, or counterclockwise, to American-type tones, a little bit tighter, a little bit brighter, and then all the way clockwise is like more mid-heavy,
a little bit
marshly, like more British sounding, basically.
Definitely.
Defined by the taxi cab on one side and the Chevy on the other
side. Yeah.
That's very, very good bit of design.
I mean, there are 5-watt amps out there for practice, but the little head's not so practical, especially because then you've got to buy a cab anyway.
Yeah, sure. But if he's looking for a head, what we're saying, the Hughes & Kettner TubeMeister 5. But just because you get a few more options.
You've got the red box built in, which means you can go straight into a PA or you can go straight into an interface for studio monitoring.
The other option as a sort of bit of a curveball there is the the Laney Cub 12 head.
Oh, yeah.
You can run it at 12 or you've got another input for 1 watt.
Okay.
And that's really, really good. I really like those. I think the Cub series is really, really cool. I wouldn't go for one over one of Hughes and Kettner's, but it's just as another option.
What about a Micro Terra? Is that something to consider? I mean, it's 20 watts, but it's
20 watts
solid.
RMS.
Yeah,
20 watts solid state, though, isn't it?
It's a different beast, really, I think. They sound good. They definitely sound good, and they're like a super fun amp. But I think for the sort of application that maybe Doug is thinking about, then the ones that we've discussed, really. I think particularly the Hughes & Kettner is a solid, solid amp. John on Facebook, Jay, this is definitely for you and I. John on Facebook says, I'm looking for an overdrive pedal to get near the classic Fat Wreck or Epitaph guitar sound of bands like NoFX, No Use For A Name, Pulley, Lagwagon, or more towards the Lawrence Arms Alkaline Trio sound. Any suggestions for something not too expensive along those lines?
DS1?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go...
Is that what he used?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's definitely a DS1, but I mean, if you're looking at sort of like 90s... punk rock guitar sounds, a lot of it is just going to be fairly inexpensive distortion pedals. DS1.
I can't imagine that NoFX were using anything like boutique-y.
No, definitely not. And particularly on those kind of early records.
It would just be a JCM with probably a DS1 in front of it. I really like, as I say every week, probably the TC Electronic Mojo.
Yep.
I think it's a really, really cool sort of mid-rangey sort of draw. Like, I really like that. It's quite transparent, so you can still hear that it's a Tele going into a JCM. I assume is probably what you're using if that's the sort of sound that you're looking for.
Do you know what I would say, actually? If you wanted to go... I think if you were looking at more the kind of like Alkaline Trio, Lawrence Arms style, where it's a bit more kind of open, it's a bit more complex, Mojo... If you wanted a strictly kind of like Epiphat sound, real 90s, go for a DS1X, because actually what you get there is that real tight recorded sort of DS1 sound.
Yeah.
But it almost sounds like a DS1 after it's been through the Marshall and it's got a mic in front of it.
Yeah.
Quite a bit more money than the standard DS1, sort of double the money. But if you've only got a fairly inexpensive amp, actually that could make the difference.
Having
that DS1 amp.
And I mean, that's still going to be... I mean, it's only the same sort of price as a Tube Screamer, right?
Yeah, I mean, what, they 119, something like that for a DS1X?
I think they're They might actually be 139.
Maybe but yeah,
one,
well,
so between 119 and 139, I think.
Well, I mean, the other option, of course, there, you know, elephant in the room there is the Tube Screamer.
Yep.
You know, again, that kind of depends on the amp that you're using, I would have thought. But if you just want something quite subtle, the Tube Screamers are so good. But yeah, like any of those, you don't really have to go anything crazy. Don't go anything too gainy. And you know, you can, it's a very, very easy sound to replicate.
Yeah, like I was saying, I think DS1X is almost that sound in a box, really. But obviously it is a bit more expensive. So Scott from the Facebook group, Scott says, I play mostly in an acoustic band, although we do layer some electric guitars on from time to time. Looking to build a single pedal board for both acoustic and electric. Was thinking A-B switch, then reverb, and again, this is not an order, reverb, compressor, overdrive, then splitting the into a Vox and an AS50D.
Oh, nice.
Would that work for this acoustic rig in particular? Matt. So
let's get this right. So what? So he's mainly playing an acoustic.
Yeah.
But he wants one pedal board that's going to go into both amps.
So
you just put the AB box at the end.
Well, possibly, but if you put the AB box at the end, then you put the overdrive going into the acoustic amp.
Yeah, but
as well.
You don't necessarily turn on the overdrive, do you?
Yeah, but if you have got, if you've got the, I guess it depends. If you want to play the acoustic and the electric, oh, I don't know. I'm a bit
well, basically,
confused.
I mean, it sounds similar to. What does he call himself now? Black Francis, the guy, the main guy from the Pixies.
Frank Black.
Yeah, I think that's. Is that?
It's been. I mean, his real name is Charles something.
Okay. But, well, Charles from the Pixies. Does the same thing. He uses a Vox AC30 and an acoustic amp. I can't remember which one has one pedal board that goes into both.
Okay.
And it's just an AB box at the end.
Yeah.
So you've just got your pedals and whatever, and then AB box, and then it'll just go between electric amp or acoustic amp. But like Jay said, the only thing about putting it at the end is, obviously, your overdrive will go into your acoustic amp, which you might not want. So you can put it at the beginning, and then, obviously, if you just... What some people do is go into the AB box, and then, say, out of output A... into your acoustic amp, so output A into, say, like a DI box and a compressor, and then into your acoustic amp, and then output B will go into an overdrive, into a reverb, and into the Vox.
I mean, the AC, well, if it's a Vox, if it's an AC, if it's a Vox AC, that'll have reverb built into it anyway.
So the reverb pedal could actually only be for the acoustic.
But then, so there's an AS50.
So we're saying, sack off the reverb. But it depends whether you want to use the compressor. I mean, saying that the AC30's got reverb in it doesn't necessarily negate the use of reverb anyway. You might want a different tone.
But the only reason I draw that particular thing to the attention is if you go, you could go guitars into the compressor, into the overdrive, and then into the AB box, and then you could go one side to the acoustic amp and one side to the electric amp, and then put the reverb... Oh, I think I've confused myself now.
How about two AB boxes?
Well, I mean, that's the other option.
Why would you want two AB boxes?
So, AB switches which guitar's coming in. So, you go from your two guitars using as an ABY, but that selects which guitar is plugged in, and that selects... Which, and then you go into like one signal path, and then you only turn on the pedals that you want to use for that guitar, and then ABY at the end that decides which amp it goes out
to. You could do that, but you're just adding an extra switching box when you could just unplug a lead and plug another guitar.
That's true. You could do that. Scott, I think get back on the Facebook group. Give us some more details. Which pedals do you want to use with which guitar?
Pitches. And
yeah, send us some pictures. That would be best, actually. Post up some pictures of the stuff that you've got, and Matt will maybe do a few different like pedal diagrams for you and how that can work out. But it sounds by the sound of things, actually, it's not going to be that complicated because the effects that you're using aren't super complicated. Okay, this one Sam on the Facebook group says, question for me ties in with what I do in my spare time setting up guitars. At what price range, if any, does a retailer like GAK start doing a full setup before the guitar gets sold? So it's a question for you guys in store, really. I mean, we check all the guitars when they come in.
Yeah,
You guys obviously check them when they come out of the box and perhaps go onto the shelf.
Know, and when we hand them to someone, we check them. And when someone buys something, if there's something they're not quite happy about, yeah, we'll make small tweaks. I mean, if someone goes, I want to buy this strap, but can you put 12s on it and then tune it down to drop A sharp with the trem all the way up so I can dive bomb a tone, then we might be like, look, you know, we might have to charge for that. But otherwise, you know, if there's something small that needs doing, you know, we'll try and do it where possible. Generally, though, we do check everything and everything really straight away. I mean, it's what your definition of a kind of...
A setup is, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess setup. The thing is, like, the stuff that we do, like, a lot of, so, you know, you sort of Gibsons, Ibanez, Fenders, ESPs, PRS, you know, the stuff that we do an awful lot of comes out of the box playing brilliantly. You know, Obviously it's going to be out of tune. But, you know, a lot of the time, there's no real need for a setup. And like Matt says, it's just if someone wants, if you want like a different string gauge put on, or if you want a like it down set up into a different tuning, we'll just do it for you. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what the price range is. You know, if it's a sort of 100 quid guitar that you want put down half a step, yeah, no worries, we'll do it, no big deal. Just let us know. You know, there's no real need for it most of the time, but we'll just do it whenever.
I think the key difference there is, you know, what's a perhaps a factory setup and what we think is like a sort of average setup, which most guitars come in with. You know, they come in with a string height that's, you know, an action that's kind of like playable, but, you know, perhaps isn't quite the lowest. But some people don't want the lowest. For example, you know, on my bass, you could drive a bus under the under E string at the 12th fret, just because that's how I play and that's what I really like. So we kind of, in general, we leave the guitars with a decent factory setup that's been fully checked, and then if you want anything extra doing, then we'll just do it.
Sounds
a nice compromise. So Chris on the Facebook group, Matt, this is definitely for you. Are there any pedal switches on the market that will let me have about 12 loops for each of my pedals and that can be programmed to allow me to create patches like on a multi-effects board? Matt Knight.
Yes, and I'm just making sure it is still a current product, which is the Carl Martin Combinator 2. Because we've talked about the Octa-Switch before.
Yeah.
But the Combinator is fully programmable and there's amount of banks you can have as well. Yeah, so you can have three banks of six settings, and then you've got eight effects loops. 12, I'll be honest, 12 is a little bit of an ask. I mean, there are some out there that, you know, I think there's some ridiculous stuff out there, and I know there is. And to be honest, unless you really start going down the route of having everything in rack drawers and doing something like, I was going to say the Voodoo Labs pedal switcher and the GCX pedal switching system, which is all MIDI, which will let you do that.
Okay.
But let me just have a look. I think you're looking at, like, just for the MIDI controller, you're looking at like 400 quid.
Blimey.
Yeah, which is expensive. I mean, the Carl Martin Combinator, I mean, it's still expensive, but everything is in there. It's eight effects loops, two of which are stereo. You can have three banks of six. And it just kind of, I mean, I suppose you've kind of maybe got to group things together. You know, put two effects in the loop, maybe just have one of them off. You know, maybe if you put two drives in the loop and, you know, so for example, on mine, I always want my compressor on. But sometimes I might want to turn it off, which is the opposite to what you think. You know, I want to kind of, I always patch it in and it's always on, but in case I just want to have it off, it's always on. I can just, it's always patched into a preset.
Okay.
As it were. The same, so, you know, so you could put two drives in there, have that loop always engaged, and then just, you know that whatever preset you're on, you can always use one of those two drives.
For someone who doesn't know how this sort of system works, do you want to just give a quick overview of what this sort of switching system will allow you to do? Because I think, you know, we talked about, like, we've talked about it in quite a complex way, but why would you go for a sort of switching system like this, and how do they work? How, when you're changing patches, what is that actually doing? How do you connect the pedals to
it? So basically, it's, so imagine just your guitar goes into a box and then comes out of a box and goes into your amp. Now within that box you've got 8 effects loops, the same sort of effects loop that you would have on your amplifier. So when those 8 loops are off, your signal just goes in and then goes straight out.
Yeah.
Then you've got all these effects loops. So in one loop, you know, one send and one return, you put a distortion pedal, and then that's linked to button 1. So when you press button 1, that'll engage that pedal. So you leave that on all the time, and then when you turn it off, it'll disengage that and route it away from the signal. So you can go from, so effectively everything is true bypass, but because the signal path on a switcher is shorter than adding in each individual pedal on a, in a line,
because you're not going through all the other pedals at the same time,
you're only going through one at a time, you get a better audio signal, because obviously when it's off, it's only going through that short little distance that the box has got the loops in. So then you can have 8 of those, and then what you can do is you can then program, so when you hit button 1, it doesn't just turn on what's in loop 1, it might turn on the drive in loop 1, the chorus in loop 4, and the delay in loop 5. So, so it means within, one button, you can turn on 3 effects.
Within the patch, you're saying, okay, I want on loop 2, 4, and 6, or whatever.
Yeah, and then you can store that, and then you can recall it at a later date.
And you can have more than one pedal in each loop, I take it. So say you could have, I mean, you could have a distortion pedal that you always want compression in front of. You could put those 2 pedals.
Yeah.
In loop 1.
And you just leave them on all the time, and then you just, whenever you've got loop 1 engaged, it'll engage those 2 pedals.
Yeah.
Or like I said, you can, in loop 1, you can have 2 pedals. They can not necessarily always be on, but you can always patch in loop 1, and you know you've always got instant access to either one of those drive pedals.
Yes, and that's where, I guess, going into the kind of rack draw thing makes things a bit more difficult, because you wouldn't have access to the pedals themselves to turn them on and off.
So for example, the Voodoo Labs ground control foot controller is £400, and then what that does is that controls up to 4 of their audio switches, and then each one of those audio switches has got a series of effects loops in it. So it's a whole, so you can patch in like 30 different effects.
How much are the audio switches?
They're like another couple of £100 on top. And then obviously you've got to buy the rack drawers, and it, you know, I've thought about it, but it's just...
I can tell you thought about it a lot.
But I just, I don't know. I'd much prefer to have it all on the floor, because that way you can, it's easy to program patches, and it's kind of cool just sit there and create presets and trying to faff around with stuff in drawers. And to be honest, it's just, I just think, when you ever got to take it to a gig or
just
anywhere...
wheel the racks out of the back of your car.
Nightmare. But yeah, the Cole Martin Combinator, that would be the best one. Or the OctaSwitch, but the OctaSwitch isn't as... I don't think it's as good as the Combinator.
Okay. Paul on the Facebook group says, budget pedal board power supplies. Is there anything worth buying, say, for 4 or 5 standard pedals? I like everything on a budget, but needs to do the job as well. Joe Branton, give us your opinion.
Well, I would imagine the One Spot's kind of the best thing for it. I mean, they're actually really good. I think Daisy Chain power supplies kind of got a bad name for themselves when they first came out, because they were a little bit ropey in comparison to using a DC brick. But I've always found the One Spots to be really quiet and really reliable. And you get 8 pedals out of one, and it's like £30 for a multi-pack.
Interesting how that kind of trend has shifted, really, because pretty much until like 2 or 3 years ago, everyone was like, no, you need to get isolated outputs on a DC brick, and now pretty much everyone just buys Visual Sound One Spot combo packs.
Yeah, I just use them.
I think the thing is that you are prone to a little bit more noise, and some pedals don't like being daisy chained as much, but 99% of the time it just doesn't matter. And if you've got a pedal that's particularly like big on current draw, you'd probably run it off its own supply anyway.
Yeah.
But they just work, because you can actually, you know, 1700 milliamps is going to give you like 20 standard pedals if you really wanted.
Yeah, the other option is the Carl Martin Power Jack. That's really good.
What's the, in terms of, firstly, what's the price difference on the Visual Sound?
They're about, I think the Visual Sound is 35. I think the Carl Martin one, I think, is also 35.
Okay.
They're not £40.
Okay.
You know?
Fine. What's, in terms of the spec on the Carl Martin?
I think the Carl Martin, I think it can, I think it goes up to 2 amps.
And the Visual Sound one spot
1700.
Does, yeah.
But they're more or less the same unit.
They work. Nice. They work anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Do the Carl Martin ones come with the adapters?
Yes.
Yeah. They do. Okay. Yes. So they'll do things like the Line 6.
Yeah. You can get adapters. They come with adapters so that you can plug pedals that don't have like a pedal input. Like they've got battery clip converters.
Yep.
And they've also got the old style 3.5mm jack for like the old electroharmonics pedals.
Yep. I think you get all that with the one spot as well.
You do, you get both coming. Yeah.
What's the next step up from that? Say you wanted to spend maybe £100.
The DC brick?
Yeah, £100, just DC brick.
DC brick or
Fuel Tank Junior.
Fuel Tank Junior, that was the other one. Who makes it? T-Rex.
T-Rex, they're a bit more solid again, that's more the kind of I guess DC brick design.
Yeah, yeah. And then going up from there, you can go to the standard fuel tank, which is like £130. And then the Voodoo Lab stuff. Voodoo Labs do a load of different style. Going up to, what's the big one called?
The
power
Mondo.
Pedal. Oh, the Mondo, yeah.
The Mondo.
Although that's
not...
Yeah, that's what powers my main pedal board.
But then above that, you've also got the T-Rex Goliath, don't you?
Yeah, nothing does as much as the Mondo, though.
Really? Does the Mondo do the most?
The Mondo does the most.
Of course it does. It's the Mondo.
Yeah, of course.
What's, how many outputs? And
I got 20 out of mine.
Okay.
What?
Yeah.
Did you daisy chain anything?
No, you can't. That's the amazing thing, is that you can. So it's actually two units in. The Mondo is two of their units in one. It's the 4x4.
Yeah.
And the standard brick. So you've got four, or two pairs of high output power for Strymon pedals, like the Big Sky and the Timeline, or the big Eventide pedals.
Yeah,
the
space.
And then you've got two other high powered outputs to give you. So those two give you 400 each, then the other two give you 250 each, and then you've got eight that give you between 200 and 150. And then out of those eight, they can be switchable for Line 6 units, ACA units, which are like the old Boss. If you've got old Boss pedals, they used to be ACA rather than 9, so they take like a weird 12 volt.
Okay.
And two of them are power sag, so if you've got vintage fuzz pedals, you can sag the power from 9 volts down to 4.
It's so crazy, that. So,
and that's to get a different tone out of the pedal, isn't it?
Literally, because pedals like that, old like fuzz pedals that don't have a jack input, if you power them off the battery clip, they don't sound very good.
Okay.
A lot of the time, because they're not actually used to having a full 9 volts, if not more, charged into them, because that's what you're doing. Batteries will like start off at like 9.6.
Okay.
And then within a few hours, they go down. So they're used to kind of like somewhere between like 4.5 and like 7 volts, and that's what you can do with the sag control.
So you're essentially simulating a battery that's on its way out.
Yes.
Of it.
In a way, yeah. Or you know just a battery that's kind of used, and then you can just kind of leave it in that one position.
It's such a like counterintuitive thing, isn't it? It's like, yeah. Right, I want to take this fuzz pedal and then make it sound crap.
What was that electroharmonics pedal that had the volt control on it that made it sound
the Germanium OD?
That was a great sounding pedal.
The amount of people who pedal doesn't work. Like,
it's broken.
It stopped working.
Especially when you turn the volts all the way down to like nothing and it's just going like that, just making like a dead
just
duck
weird
noise.
On its own. Noises.
The thing about the Voodoo Labs one is they do a lot of different adapters that come out of the unit, including a splitter that takes two 9 volts and, well, one 9 volt output and turns it into two.
Okay.
So if you've got two like fairly low impact 9 volts, you can power them off, and it's specially designed that it grounds one side.
Okay.
Because the problem is, if you split them, usually they a common ground, and then you get ground hum between that one little loop. So yeah, it splits them, and they do like obviously all the things for kind of random pedals and stuff.
It's
like
such
that.
A, but they're an a lot more glamorous thing to buy, and you've just managed to make it sound
it
amazing.
Is.
Between
this and the conversation about the switching, I sort of just want to get loads of single pedals again and build like a rack unit.
I've got to
with
say though,
single pedals and this power supply.
I was the same for a long time. I'd powered everything off a Carl Martin power jack for ages, and then when I got into more Strymon units, I was like, I'm getting a lot of noise, and noise is really annoying. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to go out there, I'm just going to buy this ridiculous power supply. I plugged everything in, turned everything on, and it was just like, just totally silent. And I was like, wow, Power supplies are the best.
Like,
it makes such a huge difference to your overall tone.
It really does. But the problem is it is such a boring thing to spend like 100 quid on or whatever. But like, it's so worth it.
But if you think that you've spent that much money on pedals, you want them to sound the best they can possibly sound.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like,
but it is. It's like, you know, you can go out and spend 100 quid on a DT Brick and 100 quid on a Diago like pedal board, and all of a sudden you spent 200 quid, and that's like, it's like four pedals you could have bought.
I know.
But like, it really is important to go out and do it, because otherwise, like you say, I mean, there's just no point in spending the money if you're not going to look after them and you're not going to power them properly.
See, the Mondo is 289. That's a lot of money to spend on the
pedal. It's not as much as I thought.
But it's not as much
as
like the pedal train one. The pedal train one is good, but the great thing about the Voodoo Labs stuff is all the pedal trains come with the Voodoo Labs mounting controls.
Yes.
That you mount, it's drilled straight into the bottom of the unit, and then they mount in there, and then the power supply outlet comes out the back. I just, you know, if it's me, I'd buy either a one spot or I'd go all out.
Yeah.
Well, spend, that is what you did.
Yeah. Spend the 280 quid on
it. Don't worry, it features an internal thermometer that controls a silent fan, keeping the unit cool under the most adverse heat conditions.
There we go. This is probably the nerdiest this podcast has got. We just spent 10 minutes talking about power supplies. And before that, 10 minutes talking about switches.
Yeah.
We're there. Okay, so this one could be a fairly controversial one. Chris on Twitter says, boutique pedals, is it all just smoke and mirrors?
Well, we've spoken about this before, haven't we? The pedal that was made on the mountain by a donkey and things like that.
Yeah, and one man had to climb up there and retrieve it. Like Karate Kid 2? Or is it 3, where he has to go and get the plant? I think it's 2. Someone who's more knowledgeable about Karate Kid than me, if you exist, please answer that.
Was that the one that Jaden Smith was in?
The best Karate Kid.
No, it was the next Karate Kid with Hilary Swank. Karate Kid 4. That's not in the box set, unsurprisingly. So, boutique pedals, what are we saying?
What defines boutique?
Well, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, I would say something that's kind of, I mean, hand-built's
like,
not even a way
like
to describe
beer?
It anymore. Well, I mean,
boutique pedals like craft beer.
Beer, I'm beginning to think, is all smoke and mirrors. And
I mean, I disagree, but like, I don't think boutique pedals are as well. I think you can get a lot of companies that sort of fob themselves off as, oh yes, it's very boutique.
Boutique-y.
But like, then you do get companies that are boutique pedals, like the Jam pedals that we do.
But then you say that, but then MXR, built in the States, built in the same way they've been for ages. Electro-Harmonix, constructed in the States. Is that right? They're still...
Well,
they're point-to-point.
They're out with Electro-Harmonix. They're actually outsourced and then reassembled in the USA.
Yeah, so the parts get...
Same as the ZVEX Vector series. You know, they're assembled in China, then deassembled. Effectively, all the circuits are deassembled, and then they rebuild it all in the housing in America.
Well, this is the thing. It's such this term boutique pedals. I would think ZVEX, boutique pedals.
Yeah.
But then, you know, they're sort of built in China.
Yeah, some
well,
of them are.
The
some of them.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But the weird thing is, it's like, so there's some boutique companies out there write a load of stuff on their website, and you think, do you actually know what you're talking? It's like when someone's looked up a load of big words to write on a CV, and they've gone, yeah, this, and you go, what do you actually mean? And I think that's what you think sometimes with pedals. There's people gone, yeah, we've built this thing with this chip and it does this, and I think you've just read that this chip does that noise,
well,
and you've just put it in.
Yeah, it's a thing, isn't it? I mean, guitars can. It can be about the wood and the age of the wood and the age of the pickups and the person that wound the pickups and things like that. With a metal box with a chip in it, there's only so...
Do you know what the difference is for me? And the reason I bring this up, I've been listening to the Wampler podcast. Brian Wampler and a couple of guys who work for him have just started doing their own podcast where they talk about pedals and building stuff. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe we'll speak to him. And the difference for me is that those guys love pedals.
Yeah.
And they talk about pedals for a bit on the podcast, but they mainly talk about gigs and like where their amps have gone wrong and why certain amps sound like they do. They're like as nerdy as we are, even more so about this stuff. And I think that is the reason why their pedals are good. Not because they're boutique-y or, you know, point-to-point wired or any of these terms that get thrown around. They just make really good sounding pedals.
I mean, you've got to think that Zachary Vex, who designed the Fuzz Factory, built it. So apparently the story goes he built it one night in his flat and then fell asleep while working on it, woke up the next day, plugged it in, and it made that noise, and he went, oh yeah. I forgot what I did there.
Good.
You know, and it's kind of like that thing is just like some of it's just like mistakes. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
It's just kind of just like it's experimentation and just like you say, just being really into the gear.
Yeah, I think that is the difference.
It's easy enough to go and buy a kit online and just wire it together, isn't it?
But look at someone like George Tripps. You wouldn't really say a lot of people wouldn't say like way huger boutique pedals because they're still a Dunlop thing and they're still tied in with MXR and stuff. But he's clearly like well into the stuff.
Yeah.
And the pedals show, you know, those way huge pedals are really, really good.
Yeah. But then you can get someone who is like the archetypal boutique like pedal nerd, like Reese at Bigfoot Engineering, you know, literally just sits around smoking ciggies all day and then occasionally will like maybe construct a pedal.
But then, you know, he's only got a very small range of pedals, and what they are is very, very good.
Yeah.
But again, he's someone who's out there gigging his own pedals.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You know, like the guys at OnePlug, they're taking their own stuff out.
I think the thing is now, boutique pedals tend to be defined by their price rather than by how they sound.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's the biggest problem is that people go, yeah, well, it's not boutique. It's like, what? It's not boutique because it didn't cost over 150 quid. Like full tone pedals are like 119 quid. They're one of the oldest boutique brands out there, and you know they sound amazing.
Just
the guy cares about the gear. They're constantly revising them, making them better. I think that's the thing. You see so many different versions of the same unit because the guys out there are plugging it in and going, oh, "I could probably change that."
If you're calling a boutique pedal something that's sort of made in the US, and you know people go like the people who build it go out and use it. I mean, crybaby.
Well, I mean, yeah. Well,
69 quid, you know what I mean? Like,
What about the new Boss, like, Wuzzercraft DM2? People have been buying second-hand analog delays for years, and then they've gone, but people go, oh, no, I wouldn't touch Boss, because it's like, but why not? They're just as well thought out and as well crafted as any other unit.
Yeah.
And so, I think, yeah, sometimes it's the price point.
I think what we're saying, Chris, is that...
No and yes.
Well, no and yes. Boutique kind
it's
of...
It's not smoke, it is mirror. No, it is mirrors.
Look at yourself in the mirror, have
it's
a
like
smoke.
It's like a broken mirror.
And think.
So basically, when we're talking about Bigfoot pedals, it's not mirrors, but it is a lot of smoking.
Loads of smoke.
It's a lot of smoking that goes on while they're being made. So yeah, you know, it is sort of smoke and mirrors.
I saw Reese the other day, and I'd mentioned the podcast, and he was like, oh, you're still doing that, yeah? It's like, geez, we literally talk about you every week. Why are you listening to this?
Whenever we mention Bigfoot, I make sure that the tweet that I put out that accompanies the podcast mentions Bigfoot. He clearly is not paying any attention. He's just making pedals out of old film cans in his mad laboratory.
Also, as an aside, I was at a party where he was at, and someone else was saying, like, oh, how's business? And he was like, well, you know, summer's always a bit slow, like... I can't shift any of these cables. I was like, geez, we've been... I just happened to hear him out the corner of my ear. I don't know. I was like, mate, we've been out of your cables for like 2 months. Come and build some more. He's like, yeah, my workshop's really dark and it's been really nice outside, so I've been smoking cigarettes outside.
Oh, there we go. We'll again,
he has built his own studio. He owns one of... Or they now run... one of the only all analog studios in the country.
Yeah.
Valve mixer that he built.
Yeah, an 8-channel Valve mixer that he built.
I love it. I love Bigfoot.
Recorded on reel to reel.
Yeah.
Which has been modded with like a Valve input. I should go there, record your album there, it will sound wicked.
Definitely. Right, let's do. Okay, Carl on Twitter says, have any of you ever attempted or been tempted to build your own guitar from scratch?
No.
Matt, you've had guitars built, haven't you?
Well...
You had that crazy telly...
The purple machine, the one that everyone saw on Twitter. Yeah, I didn't really build that, though. Quite often I have, but then again, I just think so many times, if I can't play it complete, I'm just never going to know.
Yeah. So completely.
It's the trick, isn't it?
And do you know what? The other thing that puts me off is the expense of finishing. The only time I've ever been tempted, I had a Japanese standard Fender neck that was really nice, and I had a body P bass blank for some reason. I can't remember where I got these things from. And I was like, right, I'm getting it. Metallic fuchsia sparkle, basically pink sparkle. I just want the most ridiculous looking instruments. And I took it to our guitar tech at the time and said, oh, you know, what would it cost? And he went, don't know, maybe 400 quid?
Yeah, I was thinking about that for the finish. Yeah.
And then, so I just thought, but if I just sell these...
But that is a bonkers finish, though. I mean,
well, no, I realise, but I mean, but then why would I build it? There's plenty... Fender make loads of P-basses that I really like.
Yeah.
If I can't get exactly what I want...
I think if you want to do it, it's because you want to make something that's very, very custom for you. I
mean,
no,
Pink
there
Sparkle.
Is no point in making a P-bass exactly like a P-bass. But if you wanted to do something that, you know, had a pickup configuration that doesn't exist on the market, or if there is a particular cut of neck that you especially want with a certain body that just isn't done, then I think it's a great
I just
direction.
Think pretty much everything's done. You know, what are you... I mean, if you like 70s profiles, there's loads for you. If you like 60s stuff, there's loads there. 50s.
I think the thing
if
is...
If you want active, it's all there.
On Fender, you have got Custom Shop, which is great because you can get a feel of different bodies and necks. It is more difficult on things like Les Paul and Ibanez, but so many times I've seen people buy all the parts from certain... you know, online companies. Wow, that looks like an amazing top. Wow, that feels like an excellent neck when you're just holding a neck on its own.
Yeah.
And then I've seen them been put together and gone, yeah. And you know, you've spent four figures.
Yeah.
Maybe buying all the parts and all the pickups, and you just go, do you know what, this guitar just... this just doesn't...
I should have just bought a Baja Tele.
Fender have just made it more affordable now by introducing their American bodies and necks as individual parts. So.
For me, I would just go and try a load out.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Yeah,
totally.
I mean, I've refinished guitars before. My dad owns a car shop. So
well, I should get him to do my Pink Sparkle.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think a lot of there's a place in Brighton called D-Luck something.
Yeah.
It's D-Luck.
Oh, yeah.
They did Foles bought did an Foles. LPJ from us. And,
no, he bought it actually.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
a
guy, right. guy called Dennis who runs this Deluxe. He it was commissioned by Foles' manager, I think.
Right.
And he bought it was an LPJ that he then did up.
Yeah, that's right. He's a motorbike.
He is. Yeah, he's done a bunch of. He did one for Wiz Khalifa as well.
Oh, did he? Oh, that's pretty cool.
And
that is amazing.
He did one other. He's done one other like quite big one as well. I can't remember who it was, but
I think like, they're actually quite affordable. His service and
I mean the thing is, it's like Graham Artek wants to do everything in nitro, which is you know a proper old school finish, and not many people do the vintage style paints. Like I asked him for Shell Pink, he's like, I have no idea where I'm going to get Shell Pink from because no one uses that colour anymore. And then you can get it, but you can get it in the wrong type of paint. So it becomes
tricky.
Much more difficult to do.
You can get those rub on stain finish packs,
but not in Pink
order.
Sparkle.
No, and in fact, my purple
you?
Is a Ford purple car paint,
which is why it's cracked.
Which is why it's cracked because that's oil based, and then underneath is water based, and the oil dried much quicker than the water based, which then cracked it. Which
it looks amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I got lucky.
Yeah.
I got very lucky.
I was less lucky with my paint job. I had a. This was a bad decision and a bad time in my life. I owned,
one of many.
I owned an OLP Stingray.
Oh, yeah.
In classic. Blue Sparkle, in large flake blue
those
sparkle.
Those were the first run as well. They were so good.
It was so good. But I was kind of out
Don't
of...
Don't you dare tell me you stripped that blue
I
sparkle
covered
off.
It in, I covered it in stickers and then, you know, it lived by a window so that when I took the stickers off, all the
there
was... So I decided to refinish it in sage green.
Oh,
you are literally. Oh, that's it. I'm not.
This is heartbreaking.
This is a bad decision. It was a muddy green.
Omar Rodriguez Lopez was using something in sage green at the time.
Yeah,
is that what it was?
It was something like that. Yeah.
So hold on. You took literally one of my all-time favourite finishes and finished it in green, which I don't mind, but sage green.
Yeah,
I mean, like.
But here's. I didn't strip. The sparkle I finished over, so of course all the sparkle is slightly raised, it's slightly flecked in the finish, so
it didn't
really work. And then I left it on a stand and the paint where the stand touched it on the bottom,
it wasn't a nitro safe stand.
Joe Branson.
Yeah, your dad owns a car spray.
Where he let me
your
do
dad
it.
Exhibit
yeah
it's your dad exhibit. Yo, dog, I heard you like Sherwood Green up in your green, so we put more Sherwood Green
in
your green.
We put a washing machine on your guitar.
Oh gosh. X to the Z, Joe Branton. Sean from the Facebook group says, hypothetically speaking, if I had around £300 burning a hole in my pocket and severe gear acquisition for a strat, gear acquisition syndrome for a strat, should I look for A, a second-hand Mexican, B, go for a classic vibe Squire, although I've always wanted something with Fender on the headstock, or wait until next year and buy an American standard, which is obviously the sensible thing to do, but since when did common sense have anything to do with gas? I already own a cheap Strat copy, which would be replaced by the new Strat, the aforementioned Classic Vibe Tele, PRS SE Santana, and the Dream Rig, JTV 59, HD500X, DT25, most of which are overkill for my current abilities anyway. What should he do? 300 quid. Does he get second-hand Mexican, Classic Vibe Strat, or a American Strat next year?
If you can hold on, wait and get the American. If you can't hold on, get the Classic Vibe.
Matt, what are you saying?
Buy an American Strat. I plug one in today and they're just the best.
They sound so good.
Matt's just showed me, wow, that is something.
So I just had to stop because I was just quickly on Facebook and Bernard on the Guitar Nerds group has just posted, we were talking about double necks and he's just posted a picture of his headless double neck bass guitar.
Nice, man.
Joe Branton, that's right.
Of course, Street. This is going to be old news by the time everyone's listening to this because this picture would have been there for.
The funny thing is while you were talking about power supplies, I got a little bit bored and I went on the group and accepted him. Sorry.
This is so good. It's a Steinberger. Oh, that is amazing.
Anyway, we need to answer Sean's question.
American standard. I mean, if to be honest, I know it's difficult. Holding fob if you really want something with Fender on the headstock.
Well, stick the 300 quid down and we'll do it on finance.
That is the other option, yeah. Put 300 quid down and then we can spread the payments. Do you know what? One of the guys from the drum shop was in guitars today and he was talking about having around this kind of money to spend. Oh, he said maybe like 500 to 600 quid.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I don't know if I want a Strat or a Tele. I don't know if I want Mexican or Squire or American. And we looked at the range, and on the Tele side of things, there's so much that you would want to buy for like 500 or 600 quid. Obviously, you're looking at like Bahas. There's the new triple Tele, which is amazing. There's all the 50s and 60s stuff. Yeah. On the Strat side of things, actually, those 50s and 60s guitars aren't perhaps as quite as alluring.
No,
and they've not done as much.
And the American special stuff is a bit too much.
Yeah.
Well, not too much, but a bit more than
out
the
price
range.
So it's difficult on Strats, I think. But I think, your best option is probably just wait for an American Strat or get it on finance.
Yeah.
We've got loads of flexible terms. And, not to be kind of salesy about it, but it's a really good option, especially if you can put down a big deposit like 300 quid.
Yeah.
It means that your payments are not going to be massive. Who do they speak to if they want to do
me
that?
Me or Matty.
You guys.
Yeah.
Get some finance terms. So there we go. And we're saying American Strat just because it is a huge jump up,
I
guess.
Yeah, I saw
one
today and was just like, they're so good.
They sounded so good.
You forget about the American Standard range, don't you? Because, we always talk about like Bahas and Classic Players and Custom Shop and stuff. American Standard are still just there.
And
rocking.
Actually, when you think about it, in the American range, there's actually almost less choice in just terms of just
they just go, here's a standard or a deluxe.
Yeah.
Or I mean, special. There's some vintage stuff, but I mean, American standard.
Yeah.
Custom shop pickups, good range of colours.
Yeah.
Guitar for life.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, so Matt from the Facebook group says, is there a baritone 12 string out there?
There is. We don't sell one. We've had one in the past.
Have we? What do we have in?
Do you remember the... I'm going to totally mispronounce it here, but do you remember when we discovered the Bargeau Sexto?
Ah, the Bargeau Sexto.
Do you remember that? That huge, absolutely massive guitar. Because we had that and the guitar on.
Yes.
And
it
was a 12-string baritone. It was tuned E to E.
We can still get these because they come from the same place as the guitar on, which we can definitely still get.
All right.
So it's a Mexican instrument, isn't it?
It's, yeah. They use it in mariachi bands.
It's a 12-string baritone.
It sounds awesome.
But is it B to B or E to E?
I think it's E to E, so it's like a 12-string bass 6.
A bass 12, if you will.
It's a bass 12. But it's not like a 12-string bass guitar.
Yeah, no, because a 12-string bass guitar is 3 sets of 4, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, 4 sets of 3.
4 sets of 3.
Why would it be 4 sets of 3?
Because it's...
4 strings and then you get 3...
Three strings for each string.
each group.
Yeah.
What, so it's... Wait, so it's... You get three octaves of E. Really?
I think so, yeah.
No, isn't it unison, unison, octave?
Yes, you're right, yeah. So two tune the same and then one up.
Okay. Imagine that. Imagine one down, one normal, and then one up.
That'd be amazing.
Or just plug into a micropod.
Well, yeah, just get a micropod. So yeah, there is a 12-string baritone, but only acoustic. The Barho Sexto, I think we think it's called.
Just drop us an email. We'll find it. We'll get it in for you.
Definitely.
You'll love it.
Definitely. James from the Facebook group says, what's the best tremolo pedal for under £100? Joe Branton.
I don't use tremolo.
Okay. Say a tremolo pedal for under £100.
The Trellocopter by Moore.
Okay.
Is probably not the best one for under £100, but it's a very affordable tremolo pedal for and with a tiny footprint.
Excellent. Jay Cross.
I'm gonna sort of be a bit boring here and jump ahead of what you two are definitely gonna
say.
Oh. Line 6 M9.
No.
M5. Sorry. Yeah. Line 6 M5.
It's got the Univibe on it, yeah, which isn't quite a tremolo, but that's...
But it's got an actual trem as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Two.
And they're just well banging.
No.
No?
No.
What, have you just... Are you saying that after a year and a half of this podcast, you're saying that the M5 is not
well banging? No, because I think if you just want to buy a tremolo pedal, TR2. Boss TR2.
Well, I mean, of course, that's the other option.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
100 quid?
They're £79.
So cheap. Yeah,
there you go.
But I still think one of the best sounding tremolos on the market.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree.
I've actually got... If you can stretch...
Buy an M9 if you can.
If you can stretch and for a little bit over £100, I would actually buy a Vox AC30 because the tremolo on there is wicked.
That's quite a stretch. Slightly different beast.
That's the best tremolo on the market, I think, is the Vox AC30.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends what you want. TR2, I still think, is a great trend. But if you want a box that does loads of stuff, we've said it time and again, Line 6 AC M5.
30. Oh, sorry.
Well, you've said that time and time and again. The rest of us have said Line 6 M5. Okay, where do we get to? Right, Vince on the Facebook group says, I've got a Squire Classic Vibe P-Bass, which sounds awesome. Now I've put some it sounds awesome now I've put some semi-flats on it. My question is, I want to add a bridge cover and a pickup cover to it. Is it going to affect the sound in any way? Joe Branton.
No, not unless you put some foam in the, you know, underneath the bridge cover, which you don't really need to do if you put semi-flats on there. You've kind of already got that.
Some people will still do that though, won't they? If they're using flat wounds or kind of like ground wounds or something, they'll still put a little like foam sponge in the bridge cover just to completely dampen that down.
Yeah, you can do. You can do. I think less. It's less applicable on kind of modern, more modern sounding stuff and at the sort of volumes that we play at these days. But yeah, you certainly can. It's not going to affect the sound in any way. Not the one on the bridge or the one over the pickup, but it will affect your access to the instrument a fair amount. So you won't be able to dampen anymore. So I guess, you know, regarding the foam, you'd have to choose whether you're dampening or not, because you won't have access to the bridge to rest your palm on. And with the cover over the pickup, it's gonna affect if you're playing finger style, if you anchor your thumb anywhere, that kind of limits the places that you can. If you play with a plectrum, you've then got a choice of using the quite limited, careful space in between the bridge cover and the pickup cover, or using the larger, but of course the strings are far less taut sort of neck area, and then that's going to affect some of your precision, and of course means that you get a very different sound from if you were to pick higher up.
I cannot play a bass with covers on in any way.
I know. Well, not on a P bass. I can on a jazz. On a jazz, it's actually a bit more usable.
That looks so cool as well.
I know. I've tried it. I've bought them and fit them on my P bass and played it for a little while and then taken them off because I actually need to be able to play properly.
Do you know the only thing that those covers sort of connected would have made a difference? Rickenbacker used to do the horseshoe pickup. So you know the cover over the Rickenbacker pickup in the middle now. Originally, that whole thing was a pickup. Picking up from underneath and also inside of that cover. Mm. It was a pickup that went all the way around the strings. Absolutely,
that's
bonkers.
Mental.
Yeah, and that's why it looks like that.
What advantage did that
have? Do you know what? I've never heard one. But I know that was certainly the case. But yeah, it's because now obviously you can take that cover off because it's purely aesthetic. I mean, it's still bloody hard to do because they're just a nightmare to take off. But originally, you couldn't do that because that was the pickup. Wow. Just a completely bonkers design and that's worth medical. Looking into. Chaps, let's do one more question because Jay, I know you've got to run off. This is from Corey on the Facebook group, who says, what are the pros and cons of the Echoplex preamp, the Carsay Boost, and the Spark Booster Mini? Which one should I choose for my style? He says, which is NoFX, Blink, Green Day, etc. I'd use it for giving the amp a kick up the arse and want to have it on practically all the time. Should we pick one each and say why? Joe Branton, out of those three, which one would you pick and why? You need to talk into the microphone for it to be recorded. Oh,
come on, Joe, I've got my answer.
All right, probably the Class A.
Okay.
Well, it's not really a pedal that I know a lot about because it's not the sort of thing that a bass player would use, but I think I saw Jay using Blues Junior and a Tele with the Class A Boost.
Really? Does that
like
me?
And very much like you. And it, just having it on all the time just enhanced the overall sound of it, and I think that was quite unusual for me because for a bass player to use something like that, we'd be expecting to use a really complicated preamp that was enhancing our whole sound. So to have a pedal with, you know, essentially one control on it that just made everything sound better was quite remarkable.
I mean, I'm exactly the same. I really like the Echoplex and the I kind of like the Spark Booster. I don't like the Spark Booster as much as I like the other TC pedals within that range. But I really like the Echoplex, but for me the Class A Boost is the one. It is just a good control. It's just the more you turn it up, the more good you get.
It's just a good control.
It's just a good control. Yeah. It's not like the control is good. Like that's what it should be labelled.
Good. Yeah. Good. Just good. How much good do you want?
Yeah. Do you want not very much good, or do you want loads of good? And most of the time, I just want not all the way, because I still need a bit of my good to shine through.
Well, you just need to be a bit humble. You can't be completely good.
Absolutely. That's
you need
it.
To have a bit of humility. Yes. So just back a touch. So
back it off just a bit, but like mainly completely good.
Good.
And yeah, that's what I'd go for. Is the good boost.
The good boost. Matt Knight.
I would just have an Echoplex preamp and I would just leave it on all the time, turned all the way.
Okay, I would probably go the same way.
Just because to me it just gives you a little bit more vintage.
Yeah.
And it just gives you a little bit of grit and a little bit of warmth. And
yeah,
and the Spark Boost Mini is good, and you know the Class A is good, but it's all about adding top end in and all about adding this brightness, and the Echoplex just gives you this kind of gritty like oomph from underneath. And
I just think it makes things for me sound a bit nicer than the Class A Boost. For me, it's a bit more good than the
really?
Class A, but wow. I can understand.
Imagine turning the Class A Boost
to
all
11
the way to good,
to 11.
And then there's another good control, a secret good control where you go into the Echoplex.
No, I mean, in reality, they're all really good.
Have all three.
All three. I think for me, for the sort of stuff that he wants to do, he's actually going to want a little bit of dynamic range.
Yeah,
I think the Echoplex is slightly better at
the
that.
The Class A Boost is quite top-endy. They can be quite trebly. I completely understand why you go with the Echoplex. I think they're both brilliant. I think they're both really, really brilliant pedals.
Excellent. Well, I hope that's answered all the questions this evening. Please do keep sending them through to the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. We will do our best either to answer them on there or on the podcast. If you've got any other questions and you're either not on Facebook or just don't want to join us on the group, you know, you're that kind of guy or girl, email podcast@gak.co.uk. If you do want to join us on Facebook on the regular page, facebook.com/gakmusic, or on the Twitter at twitter.com/gak_co_UK, or in the modern world at gak_co_UK. Or you can speak to me personally on Mark. Oh, what's going on?
You nearly made it.
I almost nearly
made it.
There's so much info now. @mark_random, where you can have a go at me for poor presenting skills. Matt Knight, how can people get in touch with you?
You can email me matt.knight@gak.co.uk for general shop things, or if you would like to buy something, or if you would like a deal on something, or if you want to chat guitars, you can tweet me @matt_knightsy. That's Knight with SIE on the end, or add, like Mark said, add us on the Facebook group. Guitar Nerd Group. Guitar Nerds Group. We are on there a lot, and there is a lot of pictures of my pedal board generally up and coming.
Jay Cross, how can people get in touch?
You can shoot me an email at j.cross@gak.co.uk if you need to talk to me about something that you need. Or if you just want to talk to me about something that you want, then you can tweet me jaybm1. That doesn't really make any sense, but...
So things they need, email.
Yeah.
Things they would like.
Well, that kind of doesn't really make sense either. But yeah, like...
What if they want is Tottenham winning the league?
Then tweet me.
Excellent. Joe Branton, how can people get in touch with you?
Hello. You can email me on joe.branton.
Hello.
I mean, he's hardly said anything today. This is the problem, is if we're going to source all of the questions from the Guitar Nerds group, like,
Do you think they're already a bass nerds offshoot?
Well, I've actually declined a couple of people who've come up and they've got basses in their picture.
Yeah, they kicked out straight away.
I can't kick out admins. I tried to get rid of Joe, but it wasn't.
I could un-admin him and then you could get him.
Have you changed the description of the podcast yet?
Yeah, it was spelled it wrong, or I did something wrong in the description.
No.
It said a podcast about podcasts or something, didn't it?
Yeah, it's rather than a group about podcasts. You really should check what it says, because I changed it quite some time ago.
Oh, no.
In fact, I changed it when we had 5 members, so every single person that's joined has read this description that's currently up there. Do you want to find it and read it out before I... say how you can get hold of me.
I don't know if I can on the phone.
Say how people can get hold of you and I'll have a look at this.
You can get hold of me on joe.branton@gak.co.uk, or if you would like to use the modern Twitter, you can tweet me at @Yosef_900, or what seems to be very popular at the moment is our new Guitar Nerds Facebook group, where you can do some rather interesting things.
You can ask questions, discuss podcast topics, share gear pictures, and upload pictures of Packham dressed as a lady. with that, shall we call it a night?
Yeah, nice. Right,
good. Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Soft and sweet. Jay's balls are just too hard.